Hour number two of our radio program. That's right. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. Just a sensational and unprecedented performance from Steph Curry yesterday as he goes for 50 points in a game seven. The Warriors do advance to the second round where they have that big date with the Los Angeles Lakers. You got two games in action tonight. Sixers and Celtics coming up at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, and then Suns and Nuggets at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Let's head out to the guest line right now and welcome in Frank Isola. Does a great job around the horn, PTI and Sirius XM NBA Radio, and he joins us right now. Frank, how you been?
Zach, how are you? Good to talk to you.
Well, I'm doing fantastic. You've seen a lot of basketball, Frank. To see what Curry did yesterday, how did you process it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a game seven on the road, and you could just tell he seemed to have that look in his eye that he was not going to allow the team to lose. You know, they played so poorly in game six. He wasn't very good. Jordan Poole was really, really bad in game six. So I had my doubts about the Warriors, but then again, you know, I had my doubts about them last year when they were down 2-1 to Boston. They were losing in the second half, and Steph had that remarkable game four, which for me is still his best playoff performance, because that's in a finals. If you lose that game, you're down 3-1 in the series. I get it. This was an elimination game. It was a game seven. It's still the first round, and it's still against a team, you know, that had, you know, an organization hadn't been in the playoffs, what was it, 16 years. A lot of guys on that team had never been through it before. It doesn't take anything away from what he did. I mean, come on, it's his career playoff high. He's the first player in NBA history to score 50 points in a game seven. It's remarkable. I would still put the game four in Boston last year ahead of that one, though, in terms of his all-time great performances.
Has he moved past Magic as the greatest point guard of all time?
No, I'm not buying that. I mean, to me, Steph Curry's a guard, so he's a point guard, he's a shooting guard. You know, Magic was 6'9". You know, Magic did something. You know, we think about how crazy we go over some of these college players. Like, you know, maybe the most recent example would be Zion Williamson, who had a tremendous freshman year at Duke. You know, every game was on TV. He was as big that year as any player in the country, whatever the sport was. Everyone knew who Zion was. Now, they got knocked out, what was it, I think the Elite Eight. It's either the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. Didn't make it to a Final Four. Next year, you know, he ended up playing just a few games in the NBA. Magic went from winning a national championship as a sophomore. So that was in late March. And then the following May, so what is that, 12, 13 months, 14 months, he was the finals MVP. You know, he played center in that game against the Sixers, and he had 40-some-odd points. I think it was 18 rebounds that he had filling in for Kareem. They're different players. It's a different era. But I would still have to put Magic. But Steph is one of the greatest guards to ever play in the, you know, in the sport, and he's a top 10 player. It's funny, right? It still seems like he probably doesn't get the same respect that maybe Michael Jordan got, even LeBron. When those guys won, it was LeBron and, yeah, these other guys. With Steph, everyone always seems to kind of group them together with Draymond and Clay, and those guys are phenomenal players. There's no doubt about it, but it's Steph Curry. He's driving the bus like LeBron did with those championships in Miami and Cleveland, like what Michael Jordan did with the six titles in Chicago. Yes, they get help, but they're the ones driving the bus, and that's Steph Curry, absolutely.
You're exactly right. Like, it's weird to call him underrated because we know he's, like, the greatest three-point shooter ever, but I do think, Frank Isola, having KD leave the Warriors and then him winning last year and then doing what he did the other day, it helps his legacy a lot more.
Oh, I think you're 100% right. But you know, it's also part of Steph Curry's legacy and why this has been able to go for so long is he's never got wrapped up in all this childish nonsense of it's my team.
Yeah.
You know, everything needs to be about me. So they go out and get Kevin Durant, and Steph Curry ends up winning two more championships. And yeah, Kevin Durant made a great team even better. Let's remember now, he joined a 73-win team, which if not for Draymond getting suspended in game five, I think the Warriors would have won. That's a story for another day. But I think that's part of his legacy. You know, if you think about what's going on in Boston, all those two guys, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, do is win. They've yet to win a championship, but they've won a ton of games. They've been in a ton of playoff games, conference finals, and the NBA finals. And you always hear those whispers about maybe one of them wants to leave. And this whole, you know, sometimes this petty jealousy can destroy a team. And that's the greatness of Steph Curry. He doesn't get wrapped up in that. He really doesn't care. And when all is said and done, he's going to have all these championships. He's been a finals MVP, a two-time MVP in the league. It was a unanimous choice. He's the perfect franchise player. He really, you know, much like Tim Duncan was with, you know, with the San Antonio Spurs, like Dirk Nowitzki, guys that stayed in one place their entire career, you know, always were able to sacrifice a little bit for the good of the team, and that is definitely Steph Curry. So that I think you're right about the legacy part, but I actually think his unselfishness is part of his legacy as well.
Frank Isola here with us. You said top 10. About where in the top 10 yeah. does Curry fall for you?
I knew you. I knew I shouldn't have thrown that number out. I knew you would do that to me. For me, I'm always going to put Michael Jordan first. You know, LeBron's got to be up there. I would think Will Chamberlain has to be up there. Kareem has to be up there. I know I'm already forgetting some other guys.
Bill Russell,
obviously. But Steph's there. And I think, you know, you mentioned it. Really, last year did it because, you know, a lot of things broke right for them. You know, they didn't really play that many tough teams in the playoffs, and they ran into some teams that were a little banged up, and they get to the finals. But, you know, when they were down 2-1, it didn't look good for them. If you remember in that game four, to Steve Kerr's credit, he benched, you know, he was going a lot of offense defense with Draymond because Draymond was such a liability out there offensively. And Steph was the one, let's remember now, that's doing it on the road in Boston with your team on the verge of falling behind 3-1. You know, I was looking at, you know, I'm not trying to say because I was there, but that one sticks out just like the LeBron game when he was with Miami before he had won a title. Remember, Zach, they go up to Boston. It's game six. In fact, it was the night that Johan Santana threw the first no-hitter in Met history. He goes up there on that Friday night with his legacy kind of on the line. He gets to win a championship, and he had that remarkable performance also in Boston. That's why those stick out a little bit more. Maybe because it's Boston, but the stakes were obviously a lot higher than they were yesterday. I get it. Their season ends if they lose, but it's a little bit different the first round compared to an Eastern Conference Finals like LeBron and the NBA Finals last year for Steph.
Frank Isola here with us. Who are you leaning towards right now in Lakers and Golden State?
I mean, it has to be Golden State. I mean, I'd like to see Andrew Wiggins play a little bit better. What's funny about it, too, is, you know, the Warriors, you know, they cruised through the regular season. They won 11 road games. And then in the playoffs, they have to win at least one, and it ends up that they end up winning two. They won game five, and they won game seven. I think having home court advantage is big. The thing now could be Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis, he needs to have a big series. You know that LeBron is going to have a few good games, but at 38, I think there'll also be a couple of days where LeBron, there might be a dud. So they're going to need other guys like Rory Hachimura and Austin Reeves did. I don't know. You know, the Lakers were this team that was fighting to get into the play-in tournament, and they're playing the defending champs. Listen, it could go seven, and maybe then all bets are off because you're going up against LeBron James in a game seven. I just think it's going to be the Warriors.
Also, how ridiculous is it that Draymond is annoyed at Sabonis that he didn't shake his hand the other day?
Oh, all that stuff, you know, is absurd. He went after Harrison Barnes after the game. I'm one of these guys. I would like for guys to shake hands after the game and just say, you know, good luck or, you know, good series and just move on. I don't exactly know the extent of it. Did Sabonis just walk off the court immediately after the game? We know that guys have done that before. You know, some of the guys on the Sacramento Kings I thought went a little overboard. I was surprised that some of them didn't ask for selfies with Steph the way they were acting. The guy just destroyed you. I'm not saying you gotta hit him, but my Lord, it was a little over the top. But look, here's the thing. A lot of players, ex-athletes and current players, have podcasts. The reason why Draymond's is very good is because this is the kind of stuff that he talks about.
Yeah.
He knows how to be provocative and somewhat controversial. I didn't have a problem. I think that was him sticking it to Sabonis a little bit because Sabonis didn't have a great series. You know, Draymond stomped on him, which wasn't good, but Sabonis got beaten up. How about that play in game six on the jump ball with Kevon Looney, who's a classy guy and a classy player? I don't think he did on purpose, but how does the league not review that? Everything gets reviewed in the NBA. The guy got whacked across the face with a forearm on a jump ball, probably was an elbow, took that, you know, that nasty black eye that he had. I don't understand how the referees don't look at that.
By the way, is there any more of a bigger joke in the NBA than Dylan Bum Brooks, where he runs his mouth and then doesn't speak to anyone when things doesn't go his way? That was so lame by Bum Brooks.
You know, when I was covering the Knicks, and I think Dylan Brooks was a rookie, and he was getting into it with Courtney Lee, and it wasn't necessarily talking. He was just being, like, really competitive. And I was like, wow, look at this guy, like, really sticking up for himself. And I really admired a lot of stuff about Dylan Brooks. I think he took on a bit of a persona, and I think it completely backfired. And I got to be honest with you, I think he kind of embarrassed himself in a lot of ways. First of all, why go after LeBron James?
Stupid.
Like, you're not going to be able to, First of all, you're not going to throw LeBron off of his game. I don't think it's going to give LeBron any extra motivation, but you just sound like a knucklehead. LeBron is still a great player. You're calling him old. Like, dude, you're not going to accomplish half the things in your career that LeBron did. I should say half the things that LeBron accomplished in his career that Dillon Brooks would. So you put yourself out there. What he should have done, he should have gone after Anthony Davis or Austin Reeves and maybe try to throw them off their game. So he doesn't do that. But that's the thing. Like, you're going to be a tough guy. How about sitting in the locker room after those losses in L.A. and addressing the media? I get it. You're the toughest guy in the world, but apparently you're a little afraid of the media because you didn't want to talk, and rightfully so. He got fined by the league, but, you know, he shot, I think it was 35% on twos, and he was in the 20s on three-pointers. So, you know, he talked a big game, and he did not back it up.
And not only that, it's like you do what you do going up against LeBron, and then after the game you're not speaking. But it's just that whole team has become very unlikable as of late. And yeah. I never thought I'd be saying that, but that's where we're just sitting here right now, Frank.
Yeah, I kind of agree. We talk about that all the time on the radio show, me and Brian Scalabrine. And, you know, last year there was something fun about that team, but obviously you can't, you know, condone any of the stuff that Ja Morant was involved with, obviously. And even Dillon Brooks running his mouth. What really hurt them ultimately, you know, Brandon Clark is an underrated player. And Brandon Clark, all he does is just attacks the rim, grabs rebounds, dunks the ball. They throw alley-oops him. He's a big, athletic guy. And Steven Adams provides a lot of rebounding and toughness out there. I really thought they were going to struggle without those two guys before Ja Morant hurt his wrist and before Dillon Brooks was talking a big game and not backing up. I thought they were going to be in some trouble. But, it'll be interesting. He's a free agent, Dillon Brooks. I don't know if the if Memphis will want to bring him back. I think he needs to, like, reevaluate what kind of player he wants to be. Do you want to just be a bit of a goofball? Or do you want to be, like, a legitimate NBA player? And he needs to improve his shot. And I'll tell you one more thing. He plays for the Canadian national team, and I've been saying this for 8 years now. The darn Canadian national team, first of all, they never qualified for the Olympics, but they did qualify for the FIBA World Cup. So when you see all these Canadian guys, whether it's Jamal Murray, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, it would be so great if we can get a U.S.-Canada game, you know, especially an elimination game at the FIBA World Cup, because, you know, obviously Canada's got a ton of NBA players, and of course the U.S. roster's only NBA players.
Talking to Frank Isola, I did not like what I saw from Phoenix in the first round, even though they won that series 4-1, but we know the Clippers were so banged up and the Suns had to play their key guys a lot of minutes. They're already down 1-0 to the Nuggets. We know game two is tonight. Who do you think ends up winning this series? You think the Suns end up coming on back, or you're leaning Denver? Because I like Denver.
Yeah, I don't really root, but I do find myself kind of pulling for Denver to win. You know, I've known Michael Malone for more than 20 years, and obviously I like Jokic and I like Jamal Murray. And I mean, Kevin Durant's won enough already, but I have a lot of respect for Kevin Durant. You know, doing the Nets games on YES, I got to see every game that Kevin Durant played. I mean, the guy is just a phenomenal player. He could fit in on any team. He's incredibly unselfish. He's a great scorer. He rebounds. He defends. So I get it. It's one game, but Devin Booker and Kevin Durant are tough. You know, you're going to put your best defender on Kevin Durant. That means that Devin Booker is going to run wild. The thing is, and you mentioned it with the Clippers, you know, once Kawhi Leonard went out, they really didn't have anybody to attack Devin Booker and Kevin Durant and really make them work defensively. That's going to be a little bit different in this series. And I think for Denver, what would be huge if they can get game two tonight, because then that puts a ton of pressure on Phoenix. You lose tonight. Whoever wins tonight, I have a funny feeling is going to win the series. But because Michael Malone and Jokic, I hope it's Denver.
Going to the East, what was your biggest takeaway from the Heat-Knicks game yesterday with Miami taking a 1-0 lead?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that, you know, I thought the Knicks looked like they were in control there for a minute, and then they just couldn't knock down shots, and that's kind of been the issue with them all season. You know, you miss 27 three-point attempts. You're not going to win the game. Miami, the one thing about Miami under Eric Spoelstra, you know, they're so well organized. Early in the game, the Knicks were getting into the lane and scoring, and then the Miami Heat make the adjustment, shut that down, and the Knicks are getting good shots. They just can't knock them down, so the Heat were going to live with that. But I still think the Knicks are okay. I think Julius Randle is going to help once he does return. And you don't know about the availability of Jimmy Butler. There's always the chance because, game three isn't until Saturday, I believe, and they could just hold him out and give him that, you know, 5 days to rest. So I still think it's going to be a huge series. How about Miami, though? They're 5-1 in the playoffs thus far, and they've already won, what is it? They've won 3 road games already. It's pretty good.
And you know what? We were looking at the Eastern Conference, and the conversation all year was Boston, and then clearly also Milwaukee, who goes down to Miami, and then it was the Sixers. I never really thought the Sixers could go get to the NBA Finals. We wondered who that fourth team was going to be that emerges, and what Jimmy Butler's doing, I know he did not play great yesterday and he got hurt, but it's just been unbelievable what he did in that game one.
Yeah.
In that first round series.
Yeah, and you know, Milwaukee has got to take some of the blame there. You know, when you're up 14 on the road and Jimmy Butler's going, what, he got 54 in that game, is it? And can you double team the guy and try to get the ball out of his hands? And then the very next game, you're playing for your season at home, you're up 16, and you lose that game. You're up 16 in the fourth quarter, and you lose. They didn't use that last timeout they had. I hated the way that they defended the play where Jimmy Butler tied it up. I would say right now, he's probably the MVP of the playoffs, Jimmy Butler. I mean, the team is 5-1. You knock off the number one seed, even though Miami is not an 8 seed. I don't care what anybody says. They had the 7th best record basically the last 2 months of the season. They're the 7th best team. Milwaukee got a little jobbed on that one, and Boston caught a huge break by not having to play Miami in the first round and getting to play Atlanta instead.
I'll also throw in the MVP conversation, and it's ironic because he's obviously not a finalist for the award, and it's Nikola Jokic who is. Jamal Murray has been great.
Yeah, no, and they need that. You know, Jokic wants other guys to take a lot of shots. What's weird, if you look at his last 2 games, I think it's 26 and 21 shots that he's taken. He had a game this year where he had a triple-double and he took 5 shots, Nikola Jokic. So I think they've told him, in order for us to win, you need to be more aggressive. But what Jamal Murray needs to be that guy. And a couple of years ago when they made it to the Western Conference Finals in the bubble, he was very aggressive. He had, you know, a big-time scoring performances. Then he had to deal with that knee injury. That's why Nikola Jokic won MVP last. You know, everyone rants and rave about those of us in the media that voted for Nikola Jokic. They had a terrific season. They didn't have Jamal Murray. Michael Porter missed most of the year as well.
Jamal Murray's what the Sixers need. And I look at that series. I know Embiid's not expected to play tonight, and Woj said they're optimistic it'll be able to go in game 2. I don't think Philly has much of a shot in this one, and Boston's had their number, and it's because Philly doesn't have that closer to complement Embiid.
I agree with you. Like, watching, you know, I was at all 4 of the Nets Sixer games, and, you know, I like Tyrese Maxey a lot. He's a really good player. But James Harden, and Harden is a great passer, and, you know, he can knock down threes. He cannot finish, though, in the paint. He's just not – he doesn't draw fouls like he did kind of in his heyday with Houston. You know, the officiating in the playoffs, they don't call touch fouls every time you drive to the basket and throw your arms in the air. That doesn't happen. And I love Embiid. He's great. But if Embiid is limited, I don't know how the Sixers could beat Boston. You know, Boston, at times, they make you scratch your head because of what happened, in game 5 against Atlanta when Trae Young went off and, you know, they blew the lead. But Boston, I thought going into the playoffs, Boston has the most talent. And I still think that's true. They have the most talent out of all the teams remaining. And to me, they're still the more dangerous team. That's a terrific tandem. If Robert Williams stays healthy, they're good. And remember, and you know, I get it. Malcolm Brogdon was the 6th man of the year, but you know, he doesn't get talked about enough. And they have Derek White, so they could just throw multiple defenders at wings. And Marcus Smart, throw him in there too. So with Marcus Smart, Derek White, Malcolm Brogdon, Jaylen Brown, and Jason Tatum, they can guard a lot of positions.
Frank Isola, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for doing this.
Good talking. I'll see you soon.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
What a great day of sports yesterday. Start things off, Heat and Knicks. I know it wasn't the greatest looking game in the world, but the Heat find a way to beat the Knicks, and their great story does continue. Golden State, led by Steph Curry, becomes the first player ever in a Game 7 to put up 50 points as he does that. And Golden State now gives us LeBron up against Steph Curry. And Hickey, the best part of the sports world yesterday, and we had Panthers owner Vinny Viola on last hour. We'll replay that for you coming up at 9:20 p.m. Eastern, 6:20 p.m. Pacific, if you missed it, as the owner of the Florida Panthers was on with us. But the Panthers tying the game up with a minute to go in regulation, and then in overtime, Florida could have won it twice. The Boston goaltender, who replaces the Vezina winner, He made two great saves. And then Boston had a chance to win it as well. First off, right out of the gate. And then also they hit the knob on the stick, too, in overtime. And then eventually Carter Verhaeghe wins it in overtime. And it really just shows you how you can never predict Stanley Cup playoff hockey. Because last year, Florida had the most points in the league. And they win their first-round series, and they lose their second-round series where they got swept up against Tampa Bay. And remember, when they lost that second-round series, when they were down 3-0, you had that report by, I think it was a Tampa Bay radio host, and a bunch of Florida Panthers players were out at like a strip club the night before the elimination game. So then this year, they don't have this great season. They, out of all the playoff teams, the 8 in the East, 8 in the West, they had the fewest points in the postseason, and they're down 3-1 to Boston, who all-time had the most regular season points and wins. And even when they're down 3-1 in the series, they come back and win. And oh yeah, by the way, then you had Colorado, the defending Stanley Cup champions. They go down to a team that's in their second year in the league in the Seattle Kraken. And that third period, I know one goal was taken off the board because it was a successful challenge by Dave Hakstol and the Kraken. But I was stunned that Colorado didn't even get that game to overtime and wasn't able to tie it up at 2-2, and Seattle wins, and they win that game 2-1. Just what a day of sports it was.
And extended to the NBA, too. Look at all the parity that's gone out with the Bucks losing, with the Grizzlies losing, with the Kings losing. Like we have seen between the NHL and the NBA massive, massive upsets so far. Just in the first round alone, it's been incredible.
So NBA side in the East, I would agree when you're talking about the Bucks losing to the Miami Heat and how many times the Bucks just did not find a way to hold on to a lead in that series. And then the game that we were watching in Kansas City as well, where I'm like locked into the Kings and Sacramento. The next thing you know, you text me, hey, go turn on the Bucks game as well. And you see that the Bucks choked again. So that was wild. But in the Western Conference, do you consider those major upsets? Just wondering. Like the Kings Warriors, I know that the Kings, they make the playoffs the first time forever. They are the better seed. Golden State, they were down 0-2. But Golden State, with how much they've won, it's like it's tough for me to consider that an upset. And then even the Lakers and Grizzlies. Like I know when you look at the difference in the seeding, 2-7 and 51 regular season wins to 43 regular season wins from Grizzlies to the Lakers. That Grizzlies team, Ja got hurt early, didn't miss as much time as we thought he was going to miss. But when they started to run their mouth, especially Bum Brooks, that's what did them in my opinion. Like the minute Bum Brooks ran his mouth, and I was more optimistic on the Lakers than you were entering the series, so maybe that's where the disconnect is. But when the Lakers heard that from Bum Brooks, I'm like, all right, this series is over. The Lakers were going to win.
I mean, yeah, I picked both the Kings and Grizzlies to win. So in my eyes, at least, I thought both were upsets. I know Vegas especially had the Warriors as huge favorites, historic favorites over the Kings. So for them, no. And yes, a lot of people were buying into the Lakers and kind of them playing well down the stretch. But the Grizzlies were also playing good basketball down the stretch, too. So at least for me, I thought both were upsets. I know that they were closer than your normal 2-7 or 3-6 matchup.
Yeah, the upsets for me work in the East. In the Western Conference, I didn't feel the same way about that. But two things that we got to get to. So the NBA fines Bum Brooks for not talking to the media afterwards. I know that he talked, I guess this was today or yesterday, in locker room cleanout day, and we'll play you that audio in just a second. But doesn't have to be one of the most gutless things that you've ever seen. Like you had no problem running your mouth when things were going your way. And then in just maybe the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Like when it comes to sports, and I'm not talking like life or death. I'm just talking about in the sports world. When you are Dylan Brooks, to take a shot at LeBron and say you don't respect someone until they score 40 on you, and he's old. What was he thinking was going to happen there? I get it. You shouldn't be scared with your tail in between your legs. But when you're tugging on Superman's cape, I think it's only going to end poorly for you. Especially when you're Dylan Brooks. And it's one thing with what he said. But to take no accountability afterwards. And to not talk to the media. and then tell everyone, oh, the media made you out to be the villain. I think Dylan Brooks, this is my takeaway from that series, he was in over his head. And he showed it because he thought he was all that. He had all that energy. And the moment when it turned against him and people called him out for just his jackassery, then the next thing you know, it's like, okay, I'm not going to talk to the media, and you make the media the bad guy. That's the word I would use. Confusing. He was very confusing to me in this series because I don't even think what he thought he was trying to able to accomplish, I don't even think he realized if he could accomplish that.
Dylan Brooks is the perfect microcosm of everything that's wrong with the Grizzlies. They are front runners. They talk the talk when things are going great. They want to run their mouth and they're winning. And as soon as it's time to pay the piper, as soon as adversity strikes, they run and they hide. And that's part of the reason why that they got smoked by the Lakers. That's part of the reason why you see Dylan Brooks after running his mouth after, by the way, a win in game two, all of a sudden then duck the media when they get smoked and they lose in games 4 and 6 in L.A. And all of a sudden now he's not in a talking mood anymore, doesn't want to talk to the media. They run their mouth, they take zero accountability, and then when it's time to face the music, they run, they hide, and they complain that, oh, like, everyone's after us, we're the villains, and everyone wants to, you know, see our downfall instead of realizing they put themselves in that position. Until they recognize that, until they realize what they're doing,
they gotta grow up.
And grow, right, mature, they're never going to change.
You know who Dylan Brooks is? He's an egg face on Twitter. He's the guy on Twitter that chirps you in your mentions, and then the moment you quote, tweet, and respond to him, he's like, oh, I love listening to you, or oh, I love you, or just disappears. That's what he kind of did in this series. He tweeted just ridiculous things, or said ridiculous things, basically like he was an egg account, and the moment someone called him on it, nowhere to be found. That's the way, Hickey, that I view Dylan Brooks after this series.
You know who they need?
And that's not good when you get compared to an egg face on Twitter.
The Grizzlies need Draymond Green.
Wow.
I'm being dead serious. Draymond Green is someone who's not taking any crap, who will call you out if you are, you know, running your mouth and not backing it up. The Grizzlies are filled with players that want to talk when things are good and want to hide when things are bad. To Draymond Green's credit, sometimes he goes over the line, in-game and off the court, so with Jordan Poole, he holds guys accountable, and he'll make sure that they at least, if they're going to run their mouth, then own up to it and play up to, you know, the standard that they're talking to.
Maybe a little too much drama.
They cannot.
Remember, this is a guy that punched another man in the face.
Oh, I get it. I think they need that.
Brooks is done in Memphis. He's not coming back. He's a free agent. But if Brooks and Draymond were on the same team, Ryan, I think Draymond would literally beat the crap out of Brooks.
Oh, it's a sub. Yeah, no, you can't have both. You can't have both. It's like the
I would need an Advil.
Was it the Japanese fighting fish, right? You can't have two in the same bowl because they fight each other. No, it's Brooks out and Draymond in.
By the way, you eventually did hear from Bum Brooks. I guess this was on locker cleanout day because he got fined because he didn't talk after any of these games. He was asked if he regrets the post-game 2 comments about LeBron.
You know, that's who I am. You know, I don't regret it. I'm a competitor. I compete. You know, I don't think it got LeBron geeked up. You know, is he back in the playoffs? It's been a little while. So I think, you know, he was ready to play. And overall, we just got beat better by a better team, bigger team. Guys that have their whole team, their whole pieces there. And, you know, I'm just going to, you know, continue to be me and get better at what I do.
Wow. That sounds like when a child gets scolded by mom or dad for doing something wrong at school and then just has to face the music and has to apologize. That was pathetic. Like, when you have all that energy earlier in this series and then you get embarrassed, that sounded like a man who was beaten down and he knew eventually he had to talk, but that sounded like someone that was, like, scared to even talk from someone that was so confident right after game two. That was stunning, that audio.
And still sounds like someone who has no idea what his words meant. And still sounds like someone who's taking zero accountability and hinted at the end of injuries of, oh, well, we didn't, you know, they were healthy, which means they didn't have Steven Adams and Brandon Clark. Like, it's the same old, where they're going down the same path of excuse making. And it's not us. It's everyone else.
I'm going to make one more analogy for Dylan Brooks. We've all been at a bar, right? And you get a little too intoxicated. And then sometimes you send out like a stupid text or something like that. And then you wake up the next day and you're sober and you look at your phone and you go, I don't even remember sending that text. And what the heck was I thinking? Dylan Brooks had his drunk texting moment at the bar. Because that's what he did in game two. After game two, he sent out the drunk text, and the next morning he was like, uh-oh, I just bit off more than I could chew, and there had to be regret in some point realizing I just created a bleep show. That's the analogy I would use, Hickey, actually.
I actually believe him where I don't think he does regret it.
Oh, then he's a bigger idiot than I thought.
The Grizzlies talk all the time, and they don't regret anything they say. So they don't learn their lesson.
But you know sometimes when like you're in a group of friends, and I think we could all relate. Like, I'm sure your friends do this, my friends do this. You all like to talk crap. And then it's like, okay, who could one-up one another? Maybe that's what the Grizzlies are, too. They all talk a bunch of crap, and then it's like, all right, let's see how I could one-up another person. And then you just take it to a level where it goes too far, and it's like, ooh, I shouldn't have said that. That's also what Dylan Brooks is. You could go the Dylan Brooks angle 7-8 different ways. What he said was maybe one of the dumbest things from someone that is not a star to say about arguably one of the greatest player of all time. Most people put him two behind Michael Jordan and LeBron James, to say that you can't even respect him. Like, it's one thing not to fear him, but that you don't even respect him until he shows 40. It's literally one of the most dumb. It is probably the dumbest thing I've ever heard from an athlete.
And when LeBron didn't drop 40 himself, the Lakers won by 40 to close him out.
Yeah,
irony works perfectly.
You're right. You are 100% right on that one. I love the way that did line up. All righty, Zach Gelb shows CBS Sports Radio. We're coming back with the news brief.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Big Rally Auto Parts, for your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Steph Curry becomes the first player in NBA history to drop 50 points in an elimination game 7. And Steph Curry says he's very excited to square off against LeBron James in the next round.
It's amazing because you're still in the fight. It's better than the alternative of, you know, on the outside looking in and, you know, having been down 0-2 in this series, like, nothing's guaranteed. You don't take anything for granted. And it is special to know, you know, from the first series we played him in Cleveland, 14-15 season to now. You know, we're blessed to be playing at this level still, and excited about a new chapter. Two teams trying to, you know, keep your season alive and chase the championship, and that's what it's all about.
And Hickey, I do like this version better. I know LeBron has changed teams, but when you saw Cavs and Warriors without KD, that was awesome. And I know the Cavs the first time around had a bunch of injuries in the Warriors' first championship with this grouping of Klay, Steph, and Draymond. And then the one after that, they were up 3-1 and they couldn't close the door shut. Whenever you got Kevin Durant involved, that Warriors team just went from a great team to a great team on steroids. And you knew even though LeBron was there in the finals, the Cavs really had no shot. So now it's nice to have Steph go up against LeBron where it feels like we don't know how this one's going to end.
It's definitely a toss-up. A toss-up for the first time, yeah, maybe ever, right? Because like I said, outside, the Cavs were ravaged by injuries. They didn't have a chance. I mean, really, since 2016, I guess that's the last time you could say it was truly, you know, a LeBron-led team had a chance against the Warriors.
Yeah. Let's go to Steve Curry, saying no one should take Steph Curry for granted.
He doesn't surprise me. We all take him for granted because he's brilliant night after night, and we've been watching this for 10 years. And we just, you know, you just have to remind yourself every once in a while, big picture, this is one of the great players in the history of the game. But that's how I felt, you know, back when in my playing days, you know, with Michael Jordan, you'd see it night after night, so you just took it for granted. So that's how it is with Steph. It's over and over and over again. And the resilience and the work that goes into that and the focus, it's incredible to watch.
Do you think we take him for granted, Hickey? Let me ask you that.
I'll speak for myself. I'll say yes. in the sense that I did not think they're going to win the title last year, and I think I picked against them in the like the last three rounds of the playoffs.
It's almost every round.
I picked against him this series against the Kings. So I just feel like we look at a Steph team maybe different than we would a LeBron team when he was in his, you know, peak or stuff like that. So I would say some, for some people, yes.
What I think happened is when you had Kevin Durant go there, it threw everyone through a kind of like a mental hula hoop where it was like, yeah, they went from being this lovable team where Steph got a ton of credit and they win that championship. Then they lost the championship and they go and bring KD in. I think for a lot of people, for a little bit, it just made people out on the NBA in terms of we know who's going to win it at the end of the year. And then KD leaves, you have all those injuries. And the one knock on Steph was, oh, he doesn't have a finals MVP. But then he gets that last year. So him losing KD only will further enhance his legacy. Because we all know what he's done and the way that he changed the game. But I do think there was a lot of people upset with the whole Kevin Durant dynamic to it. And now since KD's gone and they've gone boom, pretty much like right back to form where they won a championship last year. And now we'll see how far they take this. This chapter in the legacy for Steph, I think, is the most important one. And he once again shows people, yeah, let me remind everyone, we could win without Kevin Durant. And that's what I think is a very big part of it. We'll keep it moving. We'll stay with the Warriors, though. Draymond Green on his Volume podcast is upset. That's a bonus. Didn't shake his hand after the series.
Lost a lot of respect for Sabonis. You don't shake guys' hands after you lose. I don't respect that. I once left the court when we lost in Game 7 of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I went to my locker room and I sat down and I said, this don't feel right. And I walked back out on the court and I showed everybody love. You lost. Deal with it. Pay your respect.
You know how I feel on this, Hickey. I hate when we have grown men bitching about who shook hands and who didn't shake hands. If you're a professional athlete and you don't shake hands after a game, I don't care for a single second. And also, Draymond. I know people are going to say, but he tugged Draymond Green's ankle. You stomped on the dude's chest. If I'm Sabonis, I don't want to be all warm and fuzzy with you after you stomped on my chest intentionally. So I don't have a problem with Sabonis not shaking hands. And that goes for any player. You want to shake hands? Great. But when you're a professional athlete, I know people say, what about the children and the example? Nonsense. Little League different, right? Intramural sports different. But when you get to the pros, I'm really going to lambaste the guy because he didn't shake hands with someone that stomped on his chest earlier. I don't have a problem with that whatsoever, Ryan.
See, man, it's kind of stupid that we're talking about it. And again, you stomped on the man's chest. You can't. I think, honestly, Sabonis would be looked at worse. Then he goes and says, hey, great job, Draymond.
By the way, Draymond, though, is a genius. Because now no one's going to talk about the stomp anymore. And you're going to have some of those Draymond Green sycophants that are like, oh, Sabonis, he's a bad dude. He didn't shake Draymond Green's hand. He didn't try to bury the hatchet like it's his responsibility to do that for just what happened with Draymond Green. Maybe the biggest sports story of the day. I know it's tough to top Steph, but when you have a team and the Boston Bruins have the most points and most wins in NHL history, they're up 3-1 in the series, and then the Panthers come on back. They score a goal in the final minute to get that game to overtime, and then Carter Verhaeghe wins it in overtime. Panthers, fewest points in the playoffs this year. They just beat the team that had the most points and most wins in all time when it is the NHL. Let's go to Bruins coach Jim Montgomery on the feeling following the loss.
Well, the way it ended didn't matter how it ended. It just, the season's over. And it's, I guess the words that come to mind right now is disappointment, confusion. And then I would say the other part is if you start looking at the season, okay, it was an honor to coach that group. You know, I know we didn't get to where we wanted. I get that. But their professionalism, their work ethic, their commitment to being pros, it was a joy to be around.
It's so tough when you're historically that great. And I saw my football team. They were 18-0 heading into a Super Bowl. right? Like, you look at the Warriors, the most regular season wins of all time. They're up 3-1 in the NBA Finals. They lose to LeBron. It's almost like you'd rather lose a game if you were the Patriots during the regular season that year. Or if you're the Warriors, you get to like 70 or 69 wins, something like that. Because once you get the accomplishment in the regular season, you should embrace expectations that it's a failure that you don't get the job done. Then everyone knows it's championship or bust. And you just wonder how guys deal with pressure like that. And for Boston, great regular season means jack, though, unfortunately. Because it's the same thing like with the Bucks. I know they didn't have an historically great season. Yeah, it was a failure that they didn't win it all this year. Because you're the number one seed. And you didn't even get out of the first round. But it is tough because there's a human emotion to this. And some guys feel that pressure in those moments of adversity when momentum starts to shift. Other guys don't. But, man, that's got to be as deflating can be. And in hockey, like, it's a little bit different because you usually expect the one seed to go down. And there's only been like two times in like the last 15, 20 years the President's Trophy winners won it all. But, man, that's just a brutal defeat and a brutal choke job by the Boston Bruins.